Thomas Newman at Ohio State University, taking place at his home in Columbus, Ohio. The date is February 3, 1979. The interview is being conducted by Professor John H. Wodis, Chairman of the Oral History Committee of the Division of History of Chemistry of the American Chemical Society. With me is Professor Milton Orchin, Professor of Chemistry of the University of Cincinnati, a former student of Professor Newman. This is the second tape. The first tape was partly erased during an accident, and we reconstruct it as we know how from notes that were taken during that period. We have on the first tape, we have traced Professor Newman from his birth in New Orleans, moving to New York City to complete his education, high school education that is. Professor Newman had a private tutor at that time to complete his high school education. A private tutor turned out to be a professor, Dr. Marcus, an organic chemist, who not only tutored in chemistry but in all subjects. Professor Newman comes from a well-to-do family. His father was in business, dealing with liquidation of certain companies, first in New Orleans and then in New York City. There was an attempt on part of his family to interest Mel to enter the business. He refused. He found more satisfaction in studying of chemistry. He received his bachelor's degree at Yale University and also his PhD degree at Yale University with Professor Anderson, who was interested in the chemistry of lipids, especially as it came from yeast. We have traced on the previous tape Professor Newman work as a postdoctoral student with Professor Anderson and later on as an recipient of the National Research Council Fellowship, which he spent at Rockefeller Institution. There was a period at that time where he was unemployed for 3 months, but he was rescued by being asked by his former major, Professor Anderson, whether he would be interested in accepting a postdoctoral fellowship with Professor Feather at Harvard University. At Harvard University, he was very much impressed by the quality of the work. He considered this to be far superior than anything that Yale had to offer, especially the informal attitude that was prevalent at that time. Professor Feather asked him to synthesize certain methyl substituted phenanthrene, which he did, and during the synthesis he developed an interest in stereochemistry, inasmuch there were some questions with certain cyclization reaction or making polynuclear hydrocarbon reaction of Grignard reagent with the substituted aryl benzoic acid. The formation of the pseudoester was not understood at that time. He wanted to see what actually goes on, and at the time he was under consideration of accepting a position at Ohio State University. At that time he wanted to see what kind of research he would be pursuing, and the answer was understand the formation and the property of the so-called pseudoester. We are now going to continue with the interview where Professor Newman will trace his early years at Ohio State University. We are now continuing with the interview. As I mentioned earlier, part of the reel number one may have been erased during the reversal of the first tape. We have brought Professor Newman to a period of time around 1940, when he is in a process of leaving Harvard University to accept a position at Ohio State. My mistake. It was during the period of 1936 then, when he is in a process of moving from Harvard University to Ohio State University. You were here on an interview trip, and we were talking about the fact whether it was practiced at that time to have prospective faculty members to present a seminar and what might have been the subject of your seminar.
It was probably the cancer field, because that was what I was doing for FISA. So it was probably something in that area. I can't truthfully say I remember.
You don't even remember accurately whether you gave a seminar.
No, I don't.
Whether it was the practice then to give it.
Well, as any members of the Ohio State Department at times that impressed you one way or another? During
the period, or depressed?
In any way you want. During that period, do you have any recollections?
Well, I remember liking Evans, but I can't say that I took to anyone else particularly, either one way or the other, either for or against. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make
what,
any
sense. What attracted you about Evans?
Well, the way he talked about things. He was very forthright. I mean, he wouldn't just agree with you or not agree with you. There would always be a reason why he would say something. He was a very cordial person.
Was this the only interview trips that you took during that period, seeking a position?
It was the only job offer I had, period.
Well, at that time, it was not even a job offer. I mean, it was only
an interview trip.
Yes. In other words, were you actively seeking position during that period at Harvard University?
I must truthfully say, I think I would have accepted any job that was offered me, because I wrote to several industries about a position, but as I say, I never got an answer.
Mm-hmm. How long were you then at Harvard?
A year and a half.
Year and a half. Any chance that the fellowship that you had with FISA would have been renewed had you not obtained an offer for a position?
It would have been renewed, I don't know for how many years. But, he had this money from the Eli Lilly Company for many years, and I know other people have had such things. You know, Joshua worked with him, didn't he?
Yeah.
Do you know if it was on Lilly money or not?
No. I don't know if it was on Lilly money. Joshua came there, I think, in 38.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. But FISA really always had plenty of money to offer.
Was it practiced at that time that applicants have expenses taken care of by the prospective employer? Or did you have to travel to Columbus at your own expense?
I had to do it on my own.
Very likely. how about moving? Moving expenses were unheard of probably in those days. Huh?
No, I know we paid all the moving expenses.
What was your salary? You remember, Mel?
I think it was something like $2,500.
That would sound.
For how many quarters?
It was for the academic year.
Yeah, so three quarters.
Three quarters out of the four, but yes, you're expected to spend the fourth quarter doing research.
At no pay or extra salary if you were teaching?
The year pay was always paid in 12 equal installments.
I see.
Now, if you kept your 3 months, I did this often in the early years, worked six quarters in a row, and that would give 6 months off where I'd still get my salary.
Yes.
And then I could do whatever I wanted to with that 6 months. I could either spend it at Ohio State, or I could go someplace else and earn some money. I remember I spent 6 months at Yale on some kind of a fellowship, and it was the Howells Fellowship given by Ohio State, so that getting money did not prevent me from getting some other money for that 6 months.
Well, but it wasn't considered a sabbatical leave.
No. Ohio State has never had a sabbatical year, as far as I know.
They don't have sabbatical even now?
It's rare. What it is, you see, you have 3 months a year, essentially. And people have done what I've done. They take 6 months and spend it wherever
you mean
want.
You work six quarters and take, two quarters off?
For instance, I had a Guggenheim Fellowship, which is a year, but I had it broken up into two half years, mm-hmm, 2 years apart.
Mm-hmm.
So that you
could get your full pay in the Guggenheim money as well?
As well. In other words, they realize...
So that's equivalent to a sabbatical in a way.
It's equivalent to 6 months every 2 years, which is better than a sabbatical.
Right, yeah. As a matter of fact, yeah. Well, that's an academic question. I won't go
into it. What were you teaching, Loudon, for your first year?
Well, I taught in general chemistry.
Freshman chemistry?
Freshman
How chemistry. How much? One second?
2 quarters.
I mean, but one lecture, three lectures
three a week? 3 lectures a week.
Were there 2 lectures a week or 3 lectures a week? Can
I
you remember?
Think there were three, but three there was also a lab that went with it.
Yeah, but you had some lab assistants, I trust.
Yeah, but I used to give lab lectures also.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So your assignment was freshman chemistry, lecture, and lab.
Right.
So you had 3 hours of lecture and maybe, I guess, one lab week. Is
one easy. Lecture.
One
week.
Lab,
but
one
I
lab
had two courses, you see. I had two sections.
Oh, two
I didn't
sections.
Have one
I
section.
So
I had two sections.
I see. Taught the same thing twice.
Right.
When was the first time that you taught an organic chemistry course?
In about 1941, I think it was.
Is it
first
undergraduate, organic, or graduate?
Undergraduate.
Did
I was
know
transferred to the organic division after 4 years.
Afterward, yeah. You didn't know, when you made the interview trip, was it clear that that's what you were going to do, is teach freshman chemistry?
Right.
And you had never taught freshman. I mean, you
never had it.
Yep, you never had freshman chemistry. You
no.
You must have had
to
work
a lab book and
well,
study up ahead of time.
You probably were using McPherson and Henderson.
I'm sure I was.
And what was your rank, academic rank?
I was instructor.
Instructor. After, 4 years of postdoctoral work, they still hired you as an instructor, as an assistant professor.
And I was tickled to death.
Yeah, McPherson, Henderson was still in the department then, as I remember.
Yeah, McPherson was in the graduate school.
And he was
dean of the graduate school,
but Henderson was still teaching in the department.
He stopped, but I don't remember just what year it was.
Well, I had him for a graduate
you did.
Course. So. Did you know him at all well?
No.
Or McPherson?
No.
I suppose, who do you think were the best, most visible people in the department at the time you came? Who had you heard about at Ohio State? I mean, what was the vision, the image that Ohio State had, to say, looking at from Cambridge?
None. It
had
no
goggles, huh?
As a matter of fact, when I told B there was a possibility of a job at Ohio State, she says, where is it? I said, I don't know. Let's look on the map. Bertha was looking west of the Mississippi.
Well, the far west for New York or
Staten. We had to
look up the Allegheny. You see,
yeah,
because the Allegheny is in the far west.
West,
And what about, so you really didn't even know, but was Ohio State on the chemical map, do you think, at that time?
No. For me, it wasn't.
It wasn't. Well, yeah. Who do you, when you came here and were here a year or so, who did you feel?
Well, I thought Evans and his carbohydrate work.
Mm-hmm. Wolfram was here then. Wolfram was here.
I had very little contact with Wolfram.
Mm-hmm.
My contact was mainly with Evans and Folk and Cornelius.
Mm-hmm. And Werner Buhrt.
Buhrt must
No, Bachman, you succeeded, really. That's how you got the job.
Bachman left.
I know, but Bachman was more than an instructor, wasn't he, when he left?
I don't know what he was. Was he a professor?
No, I don't think he was a professor,
he was more senior than an instructor.
Yes.
So they filled it with instructor.
He went to industry then.
Oh, yes.
And then later...
He went to Eastman Kodak Company.
Eastman, and then he went to Purdue.
When you were here on an interview trip, were there any discussion of what you will need in a laboratory, what equipment, or any particular furnishing, was this ever mentioned?
I don't recall it.
Because full professors, when they move, there was tradition, certainly in German universities, when they move from one place to another, they had it nailed down what kind of an institute they will have and what remodeling or building must be fulfilled. But that was not the time. The impression, after all, was more important than
The jobs were
difficult to get.
I don't know how many academic jobs were open that year, but there weren't many.
How long did it take from the time you were in an interview before you got a formal offer?
I don't remember, but I don't think it was more than 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And would you have any idea how many candidates there were that they interviewed at that time?
No. I don't know.
And there was no commitment of you teaching any organic course, graduate or undergraduate?
I was told I could have graduate students.
Yes.
in the field of organic, but my teaching was inorganic.
Was there any limitation, what is now called a membership in a graduate faculty, full or associated, which permits you to direct students on a master's level only until you turn out a few before you can direct PhD students?
Not that I recall. When you started, you were going for a PhD right away.
But I got a master's
first.
Yeah, but you went into the PhD program. You know, there wasn't any distinction. You made it as the. I suppose even then there was the concept of the master's being a terminal degree for those who had some questions. Right. But, you know, I'm curious as hell, Mal, about why Evans would have offered you the job. After all, he wasn't in the same field. I mean, carbohydrates was a special field. It had nothing to do with the kind of work you were doing. I wonder what, and he probably,
I think a trust in Fieser? I think it was Harvard had a terrific reputation.
You think it was?
As a matter of fact, again, he told me after I was there over a year that he had paid more attention to the recommendations from Harvard than from Yale. He said one, the chairman of the chemistry department at Yale had written a letter recommending somebody other than myself when he was asked to recommend me. And that he said the chairman of the Yale department letter would never have gotten me a job anyplace. And then you talk about this honesty. When I got the job, and I passed through Yale, the chairman called me into his office and said he wanted me to know how influential he was in getting me the job here.
Who was the chairman at that time, dear?
H.A. Hill.
Well, it really is, that's a puzzle, it's sort of a puzzle. I don't mean to detract from the personal impact that you could have made, but you know it was, you know, a buyer's market. Right. And he probably.
I think Fieser's letter and Kohler's letter probably.
It was probably the. Give some credit to Evans that he probably was looking to really build the image of the department as in terms of.
Well, you did mention that Buckman had some making a physical organic image.
And he was a Yale man.
Buckman was a Yale man, that's right. But Buckman was kind of an organic chemistry.
Yes, but right. Definitely with a physical chemistry
I did my senior problem with Buckman. And it was organic. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I would have thought that you had a lot of strikes against you, knowing Evans, and I did all my undergraduate work at Ohio State, and you know, sometimes the students know a good deal about what's going on in the department, but some of the faculty don't know. It's an old story, and I know it would have surprised me that they would have brought in a Jewish faculty member at that time, because I had a lot of difficulty because of being Jewish, and it just seems you must have been a hell of a convincer. Lucky for him.
Well, I don't know how it happened, but I always thought the letters.
You must have given a damn good seminar.
But he doesn't even know if he gave one.
You don't remember me giving a seminar.
No, I don't. But I was an undergraduate. Yeah. See, at the time you interviewed, I was a senior.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if there wasn't a seminar.
You see, I don't think the things are the same. You know, now if you come for an interview, you know, you want the whole graduate student body to come in
to hear.
Encourage. Yeah, you encourage.
I think I talked personally with every faculty member. But my guess is that I didn't give a seminar. I don't remember making some slides up or anything like that.
How long were you on campus here?
John, before we leave that, question of selection, because, you know, you were interested in as well as I, because we've gone through some of the same things ourselves. My feeling is that in those days, the department had made the decision. I mean, he would mind consult as a matter of courtesy, but it was strictly a matter of courtesy. I don't think in those days the faculty got together and voted on someone. I think the department had...
Evans talked with different individual members and then just made up his mind.
Yeah, I think the situation is much...
Was there any interview with a dean or anybody in administration at that time?
Do you remember talking to McPherson, for example, who was dean of the graduate school?
I probably did. I probably talked with him.
Because he's an impressive, he was an impressive person to talk
to. Right.
You know, he wore the white stiff collar, always dressed immaculately, you know. He was a very impressive person and spoke with authority. Quite different.
How many days did you spend in Columbus during your interview period?
I think it was probably about 3 days. As a matter of fact, I stayed with Evans. In Evans' home.
Yes, sir.
In the evening.
You know, I'm glad to hear that, because that's a vision, say, a student never had. You know, a student always has a different view of a department.
Well, I remember playing ping pong with one of his kids. He had a ping pong table.
Mm-hmm.
And we played so long that Evans finally stopped us. He said, it's time to go to bed.
And Evans was department chairman for how many years?
Oh, a long time.
I know this, when the next chairman was Mac, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right, yeah.
And this was announced at some meeting, because I was sitting next to Fernelius. And when the announcement was made, Fernelius says, that means I'm leaving. So it must be that Fernelius was a candidate. Or thought himself as a candidate for chairman, and when he was passed by for Mac, he just said it, I'm leaving. And he did.
And when did Mac become chairman, do you recall?
I would guess it was the early 40s.
Yeah, because
we
I
got
came
in the war in 41.
Yeah.
I would guess it might have been 40, because he went away during the war, and Moyer was an acting chairman.
No, I came in 1941 as a student, and Mac was chairman at that time. And was still here, in 41.
So if I had to guess, it would be 40.
Goodness sakes.
But Mac came in.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize it was that early.
Yeah.
And when had he been? How long had he been head? He had been head for a long time.
Evans or Mac?
Evans,
Evans had been for, I would guess, 15, 20 years?
Oh, I would think so, yes.
At least.
As a matter of fact, who was the chairman of the department before him? Was it McPherson?
I think it was McPherson.
Mm-hmm. Very likely. And McPherson dates back a long time.
Yeah. But he taught chemistry, and then he was in the graduate school, I don't know how many years, but... Well, as far as that goes, in 1944, I was promoted from assistant professor to professor.
Mm-hmm.
And the story behind that was that I intended to leave, because I'd had some contact with the Upjohn Company about some research, and their research director was only had a B.S. degree and was in some field of biochemistry. Not organic. And I remember talking with him at Upjohn. He said, the next research director we get here has to be an organic chemist, because he foresaw the future of the pharmaceutical industry as being a synthetic dominated thing, whereas previous to that it was all biochemical things. You extracted things and sold them.
I mean, you had an offer from Upjohn to become research director?
Research director.
1944?
Was that a firm offer?
Yeah, it was like this. It was a firm offer. I wasn't going to be the research director right away. I was supposed to go in and do organic for a couple of years. But the idea was that I would be the next research director. This guy was still alive then, see? Well, actually, as a matter of fact, he died.
That was
in
1944.
And I told Moyer, who was the acting chairman, that I was leaving. I didn't come to him with the idea of bargaining. I just said I was leaving. And the end result of that was I had the offer to be raised to professor.
In other words, you did skip the associate professorship?
Yeah. Right? And, well, then I accepted to stay here.
Well, I think the mistake was made when they hired you as instructor.
In those days.
When did you go to assistant professor?
After, I think, about 4 years.
After 4 years from instructor to assistant professor? So you
maybe
think
maybe it was 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to look it up.
It's almost incredible, you know, the way we look back, you know.
Well, overall, it
was a depression-dominated country.
Sure.
There were no jobs.
Well, but look,
the rank was
not always tied in with salary, don't forget.
What's the normal time now from going from an assistant professor for an extremely able person? From assistant professor to full professor, normally. How many years?
About eight.
It's about eight. Yeah. So you came in 36 and 44.
Well, it's about the same.
But the point is that it was unusual, both in terms of the times and the fact that you went from instructor to assistant professor. Mm-hmm. And so it was very unusual, as a matter of fact.
They don't hire anybody as an instructor anymore.
No, never said a doctor.
The market's different.
Sure.
But if you'd have a hell of a depression, you'd see it changed pretty damn fast. Well,
and had you gone to Upjohn, you probably have tripled your salary.
Yeah, probably.
So you stayed here at a considerable financial sacrifice.
Yeah, and then it worked out that Upjohn hired me as a consultant. Mm-hmm. So that helped us.
Who was this fellow that you're talking about? Was he the one?
He
died.
Now, exactly what date I started consulting?
Who was there? Is that the fellow Schreiber?
Schreiber was the research man who came from DuPont.
Yeah.
But the exact year, I'm not sure of. Mm-hmm.
What attracted Upjohn to seek you as consultant? What particular chemistry?
The talks with the chemists that I had while I was there. You see, actually, I started on a vitamin A synthesis that they were supporting. Mm-hmm. Helen Ginsberg? She was working on it. She became allergic to the compound she was working with, and that stopped it. Then I didn't put anybody else on it, and I quit the vitamin A work because I realized that this vitamin A synthesis was being done all over the world at a terrific rate.
Yeah.
And who was I going to compete with with one person when pharmaceutical companies had whole teams?
No.
So I got out of it.
I'm a little bit confused here. Because this is already work that was financed through a fellowship, the vitamin A work. But I tried to go prior to that period. What particular aspect of your work they found is carcinogenic synthesis, hydrocarbon synthesis?
No, just the general
Just reputation in general chemistry.
Yeah. And as I remember, when I spoke with him, I said that I did not want to be, as a consultant, telling them what to do. They had to make the decisions economically, what was worthwhile. I said, I would only talk chemistry, which I always did. I only talk chemistry. I said, the biology and the importance of that, that's not my field.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to go into it.
How many fellowships did they establish at Ohio State? You mentioned Helen Ginsberg.
I think
supported.
That's about the only one. They have given me money over the years, but never very much.
What do you mean they give you money? How much money? What are you talking about in terms of enough to support
a postdoc for a year, maybe. One year.
Four or five program. $4,000 or $5,000 occasionally when you ask for it.
I remember phoning Phones, wasn't it?
Phones,
who also worked on some vitamin A precursors.
Yeah.
Was he supported by Upjohn?
Well, it might be or it might not be. I'm not sure.
But the work on vitamin A involves some liquid ammonia synthesis. How did you happen to become interested in this particular aspect of
that? That was mainly from my contacts with Fernelius, you see. He did a lot of inorganic chemistry in liquid ammonia. As a matter of fact, I sat in on one of his thesis exams and stopped one of his people from getting a PhD. Because it was very simple. He had taken some kind of a benzylamine derivative. And they studied the reactions with sodium and liquid ammonia, and they explained their results by getting toluene, reducing it. And they'd never isolated the toluene. So in the exam, I said, how can you do work like this and not isolate the toluene? Well, somehow or other, it just never occurred to them.
Means they assumed the formation?
They assumed the formation and never gotten it. I said, well, I can't sign this thesis unless the guy shows So the exam was discontinued. I mean, at the end, it was sort of not flunked. It was just, and the guy went and did an isolated tidy win, and it was all okay.
Well, at least you did not deny a degree to him.
No, he got a degree. It just delayed it a quarter, I think.
But wasn't Brewitt already work and Greeley working already liquid ammonia at that time as a medium for synthetic reactions?
They were doing large-scale Greeley reactions. I don't recall if they were doing large-scale ammonia or not. They might very well have. But I associate them more with large-scale Grignard reactions.
Well, there is a synthesis, or organic synthesis, by Greenlee and Brewitt making an acetylene compound in liquid ammonia. And I just wondered whether there was any close contact between the three groups of Fernelius, you, and Greenlee and Brewitt.
Well, we had a cylinder of ammonia in the lab all the time. I remember making potassium amide with that procedure, in a crucible, in an iron crucible. Oh, heat the hell out of it, and a couple of ammonia. And that's why I think when McClary almost killed himself, he had an ammonia tank, and he opened up the valve, and nothing was coming out of it, so he took the end of the hose and to smell it, and just then the valve let loose, and he practically yeah. killed himself. But coming back to support, John, of the work that Mel did in the lab, I don't know if you ever remember this, Mel. One summer, you got some money from Park Davis. You remember the director of Oliver Camp? Remember
Ron?
Oliver Camp?
Yes.
You know, he was at Illinois. He wrote that famous book on, he was the first qual organic book.
Yeah.
And then he became director of research at Park Davis. And they wanted to do some testing on cancer compounds. And your laboratory then was one of the few that could make them. So you arranged for me to prepare them for
the test
for Park Davis, and I spent the summer making. We agreed how much I would make for $500 for the summer, which I thought was a magnificent.
You were an undergraduate at that time?
No, I was a graduate student. We said, well, I was working in the same kind of field, take this time off and earn some money. And so you must have had some connections with
I don't recall this at all.
Yeah, well, that just goes to show you. Of course, I was getting the money.
You would remember.
I remember. So I think I made something. I made three compounds, I think. 100 milligrams of three compounds in those 3 months or so. I worked my head off to do all the conventional synthesis, starting with, the naphthalic anhydride. And
what year was that, Mel?
What year? I'm guessing that it was about... I got my degree in 1939, so I would think that this was the summer of 38, something like that, summer of 38.
But you were not the first student that got a degree from him.
No. Lloyd Joshua was the first student who got his PhD with Mel, because Lloyd was a year ahead of me. He transferred with a master's degree from Illinois, and he was a year ahead of me, so although he started work later than I did, he finished earlier.
Well, you were then the first student who signed up to work with, tell us something how this came about.
Well, for my Mel, of course, probably has a different recollection of it, because he's sitting in the office, but my problem was relatively simple. That I got my undergraduate degree in 1936 in June.
At Ohio State.
At Ohio State. And I had made 25 applications for teaching assistants everywhere and hadn't gotten any anywhere, and went in to see Billy Evans, as the students would call him, about teaching assistantship. And I had done a senior problem with Bachman. So I was in working in his lab. With Bachman, because
Brian
he had
Bachman, yeah.
Brian Bachman, mm-hmm. because he had charge of the undergraduate organic lab, and so he one or two students he singled out, and then I worked with one of his doctoral students, Harry F. Miller, in case you remember the name.
Oh, he went to Harvard.
Harry F. Miller, he was kind of he's a character. Anyway, first I worked in his lab and did a problem with him as a sophomore. And then as a senior, I worked in Bachman's lab, right in his lab on the first floor. There. Now then, Bachman left in 1936, and that position opened up. And I couldn't get a teaching assistantship anywhere. So I was going to stay on at Ohio State, and Evans arranged to have me get to what was called Ohio State University Scholarship, which was a great honor, but paid less. And Evans told me straight out that that there weren't going to be any Jewish boys who got assistantships there. So I was all, I didn't know who I was going to work with. And it was clear to me that the organic people there at that time were Cecil Board and Broad and Evans and Wolfer. Well, I didn't want to go into carbohydrate chemistry, which was eliminated Wolfram and Evans. And Broad, frankly, I thought he really had no interest in the students. And Board, I thought, was so classical. I had him. He was very well organized, but he wasn't very stimulating. So I had said to myself, no matter who comes in, I'm going to work with that guy. So the first day, practically, that Mel came in his lab, I went into his office and said, Dr. Newman, I'm Mel Fortune, I'm a graduate student here, I'd like to work with you.
I mean, this was when he came as an instructor.
Yes, first day he came to the
My recollection, I know I heard that before. Student comes in the door and says, I'd like to work with you. Now, my reaction was, how do you know?
Yes.
I hadn't even thought of a problem.
Yes. It was kind of unflattering in a way, but it was really the truth of that. Yeah. I know who I did want to work with. I figured anybody who came in.
So by muscle elimination.
That's how you luck out occasionally.
So what property did you suggest to Will?
Making some of these substituted methyl benzanthracenes.
See,
we were pretty sure that the 7 or the 10 methyl in those days was tall.
Okay. You had no. Did you have laboratory space already assigned to you?
I was just cleaning out my own lab, getting to work.
Yeah. That's right. My recollection was that after I said that, of course, I hope that you'll give your story. But my recollection is that I said, Dr. Newman, I'm Mel Fortune, and I'd like to work with you. And Mel's reaction was, well, sure. So I says, well, where would I work? So he says, why don't you work here? This is in his lab, and you had a desk in the corner, and there's two benches and a hood. So I says, gee, that's fine. So I says, well, what do I do? So he says, the first thing you can do is to clean the glassware.
Whose laboratory was it prior to you? I know, prior to you.
Mary Renault was in there.
Oh, that's right. Through
she went for that.
I recall the name. Yes.
And I went in there and said, Dr. Henney, I'm told this is my thing. She says, wait. So she went and talked to Dr. Henney, and she started clearing out right away.
Well, was it a surprise to Henney that you
he wasn't a faculty
member.
That's
right.
He
was in
he worked for the Midgley Foundation.
Midgley Foundation, right across the hall. What number of the room? Was that 306? 306.
It was right next to the ladies' room.
306.
Oh, I just made a record. Was Henney part of the people who expressed an opinion who is to be a new faculty member or not?
I don't think. He wasn't a faculty member himself.
But was he consulted or anything like that?
I don't know.
He was pretty much independent. It was a strange relationship, but of course he was a pet of, Kettering.
Midgley.
Out of the Kettering, So
and they were supporting
special.
His research.
Yeah, it was a very special arrangement.
And then when that stopped, I guess, he came on the faculty, but I don't know exactly what year that was.
Well, at that time, as an instructor, were you consulted as to addition or personnel matters? As a faculty member, but still with the rank of instructor.
Not that I
know. I just wonder, when.
It was interesting. You didn't have to get. I could work. Apparently, there weren't any regulations about who could accept PhD candidates. Obviously, but some schools had. As you mentioned, that you had to be on faculty special status to accept graduate students.
All right. Then you were the first student and. How many students did you attract within the first year?
Well, there was Lord Joshua, and there was a fellow named Harold Vivian who got a master's degree.
Right.
As I recall, it was three.
Yeah.
So three students, right, as an instructor, first year. That's a pretty good record.
I don't ever remember what happened to Vivian. I don't think he did any research. I think he just wrote a master's thesis.
Mm. No, he did some research.
Did he?
No, yeah.
I'd have to look up his master's thesis.
No, I remember he was doing some experimental work. But then, very soon, you got some space across the hall.
Mm-hmm.
I think the room was 314 across the hall, where some of Board's students, Charlie Frank, for example, was in that was in that lab. So Josh when Joshua came in, of course, you didn't have any space left, so you got some space over 314. When you got that space, and I moved over to Joshua. So Joshua and I then worked back to back.
Tell us something about your early years at Ohio State, about the trials and tribulations.
Well, I don't remember any tribulations. I asked for and got 8 o'clock to 9 lectures, 6 days a week. So I had a Monday, Wednesday, Friday section, and a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So all my formal lecturing was over by 9 o'clock.
But these were still general chemistry.
General chemistry. And then I went and did research. And the only interruption there was I would visit the labs, and I can give a lab lecture every so often. I remember I had the nurses and phys ed majors were in one of these sections, which is a good combination. And I worked out some experiments on milk, whereas they take milk and get different protein fractions out of it. And they always drink up half the experiment because it was in the...
I think you did have some of those football players in your class. I'll tell you how I knew is because some of them were in trouble with their academic standing, and the athletic department needed some tutors. And I guess they figured that anybody closely related to you would be a good tutor. So I used to tutor for pay some of those
athletes. Well, I can remember talking to the phys ed people, and I said, let it be understood that I wasn't going to give them any soft grade business just because they were football players. But I said I would bring to their attention people who weren't doing well so that they could be tutored.
In our discussion here, I never asked a question. Did you have any experience in lecturing or teaching class in your postdoctoral work or anything like that? Teaching assistant or anything like that?
Never one minute.
This is sort of a difficult time coming in a big school with large lecture sections. How many were there?
One section I only had about less than 100, but there was another section used to be sometimes 250.
Well, how did you cope with this? I mean, having no experience at all. What was your...
I don't remember worrying about it too much because I did the best I could, I thought, in explaining whatever I was explaining.
Well, there's such a thing as a lecture board presence, in other words, so will you be facing your audience, and you speak loud enough and clear enough, how's your handwriting? I mean, there are all sort of things that we look for when we consider a new member. You never gave it a thought, never had any advice?
I can't remember any advice from anyone.
Do you think that was a good experience to do? Would you recommend that most entering faculty members have a large class to teach in order to develop certain kinds of teaching techniques and skills? Or how important is that? Or
looking over the years and seeing what's happened in organic, and it certainly happened in every field, I think one of the biggest drawbacks or faults of teachers generally now is they try to teach too much. Just because, after all, you have a certain number of hours of lecture. And I don't think the human mind is capable of assimilating too much. When you lecture, you're not lecturing to the two or three geniuses that might be in the course. You're lecturing, I think, to the average student. And I think I've heard some of my colleagues give lectures in organic chemistry, and in my opinion, they're not too good because they try to cover too much ground. And when I talked to them about it, they said, well, all right, you look at the textbooks now compared to what the textbooks used to be. And I said, all right, look at the mind of a human now and compare to what it was. The mind hasn't changed at all.
So how do you resolve it?
I think it's better to teach a few things well than a lot of things not well. Don't forget it.
Yeah, but that really starts a real argument about pedagogy. How do you teach organic...